in perhaps, you know, the world's greatest sporting precinct, right in the shadows of one of the world's greatest cities.
I used to love the roar of the crowd.
Magnificent mark taken by Roy Carter.
A Viking is in the time.
He gets inside, well inside.
In any way that you can see a sweeping grin. Listening to the skin, you're not really behind the chair.
Oh, Cochin, just a little bit of genius.
And welcome back to Richmond Tiger Talk. My name's Nick.
And I'm Andy.
And we are in excited and fairly uncharted territory now. How are you feeling, Andy? Keeping the lid on things?
Well, Nick, well, firstly, I should acknowledge that I'm so excited about Richmond's performance. After a one-week debut on Richmond Tiger Talk, we've decided to not invite Bain back for another go on the podcast because he really was very hard to understand, so I'm pleased to be back doing the show this week.
That was good, and I've decided not to do the show from down a mineshaft this week either, so yeah, hopefully you appreciate it makes a difference.
So I've just finished watching the replay a second time.
Me too.
My God, the last quarter was tense. That game, we didn't hit the front till 5:26. And the game was intense. And, you know, as we quoted before the game by an unknown friend of the podcast, hashtag Let Ollie Train, that this was Melbourne's grand final. And I actually didn't realise how much of their grand final it was. That was the biggest crowd they've had since the 1960s in a regular season game. Which is quite phenomenal when you think they've actually had some quite good teams in that time. Also, they obviously haven't won a flag. But that game was pulsating. It was intense. We came back from the biggest ever three-quarter margin in Dimmer's career. It was an experience.
There was a lot to enjoy. Look, I think Melbourne can only take a certain amount of credit for the size of the crowd. I think the Tiger Army's up and about and feeling pretty good about themselves. Was our home game? Yes. Very nice, because I don't think we would have quite budgeted for a crowd that big. But yeah, and thankfully it wasn't subject to some of the same late minute price gouging that plagued a couple of the other games on the weekend. But no, it was quite the event. It felt like a big game and deeply enjoyable finish.
So Nick, we both love Bill Simmons. He's probably still my favourite podcaster. And one thing I love about him is he combines a sort of modern analytical approach to the game. For instance, he called out that Phil Jackson was going to be a disaster at the Knicks when, you know, your traditional analyst said he'll be fine because he's won lots of titles in the past. But he also loves the emotional side. He loves the body language. And Nick, that was a body language game special that Melbourne in the second and third quarter tried to bully us, as they have in the last couple of games, and you could arguably do that because we play a lot of outside hard-running guys who really his specialty is speed and playing well on the break. And they tried to alpha male us, and it didn't work. After that big tussle on the right in front of the interchange gate, we actually won the game easily from that point. And Nick, I'd just like to highlight four bits of play from players who aren't necessarily considered hard. Well, three bits of play and one comment in the interview. Early into the game, Markov ran straight without hesitating into a 50-50 with Spencer. Didn't hesitate. Opposition ruckman, big hit, playing his first game back. No compromising his assault on the ball. Later on, short, Hodge was coming straight at him, and he opened himself up and tackled him full on. Didn't try to bump, didn't try to protect himself. Wrapped up the much bigger Hodge in a tackle.
Jones?
Sorry, no, it was Hodge. Melbourne centre-half forward.
Oh, Hogan.
Hogan, sorry. And then finally, Hodge was commentating. That's why it was in my head.
Did quite a good job, too.
Yes, I'll mention him later. Picked up something none of the other commentators did. And then finally, Butler smothered Jack Watts when he was kicking out from the goal line and straight up went to the much bigger and older Jack Watts and told him all about it.
He's a real pisk, Dan Butler. I'm enjoying everything about the Dan Butler experience, but he gets in people's faces.
He does. So three bits of play from some of our least experienced, our smallest players, all of whom are playing in the game for their outside run, three times where when it was their time to go, they really went. And finally, my other favourite moment was Cochin, who has amusingly, hilariously boring in his interviews for almost his whole career, said something interesting. He actually trash-talked Melbourne after the game, said they were more interested in fighting than playing football, which I thought was just fantastic. So I'm loving this new aggressive alpha male Richmond.
And look, Melbourne do play with a bit of a chip, and I get that they're trying to establish themselves, but yeah, they were pretty yappy, I thought. Yeah, I enjoyed that there was no backward step to that. Look, it was a great game. It was hard to watch in parts, like there was particularly the first quarter, but to an extent the second quarter as well. They were getting a lot of inside 50s.
You can't win consistently if you're getting flogged that badly in the contested possession in the midfield, and I stand by the tweet sent at half time saying we really Miles would have been really helpful. On the other hand, hipster contrarian take on the game was a couple of things were going on. Firstly, one team was playing netball and the other team was playing basketball, and I say that with equal respect to both games. Melbourne were crowding the midfield to make sure that they won the contested ball around the clearances in the first half, and we were stacking players at both ends of the arc. Mm. So you would expect that kind of game that they would get more inside 50s. Mm. Secondly, Dimmer might have learned something from two of his three finals losses, which were masterclasses and how to rope-a-dope. You might recall Nick at halftime also tweeted that even though we were getting dominated and we were down by 4 points, and everyone, if you looked at all the online media at the time, everyone was saying we were going to get flogged. I thought we still had a chance because we had the outside run. Mm. Melbourne's game plan, that high possession game plan, it does wear you out. And they'd already lost the player by that stage. And our outside run, we've now come back from half-time deficits in three games. In all the games that, you know, have been close. We were never without a chance in that game in the way our game style played. So yes, the first half was bad, but if it had been slightly less bad, you could have said it went pretty much to plan, and then the second half went exactly to plan.
And I thought it was a mistake at selection, given it was a pretty wet night, not to have Anthony Miles in the team. I did admire that they just keep doubling down on more run, more pace,
speed, speed, speed,
speed, speed, speed. Yeah, and we had the younger team on the night, which surprised me slightly. But yeah, as much as it didn't turn out particularly well for a number of quarters, it's just so exciting when it gets up and going. And we could have used Anthony Miles. It did. You already mentioned Markov taking on Spencer. He tracked back a couple of times nicely with Garlett and didn't give him a sniff. And that was part of a defence.
Especially late.
That was a defence that gave up four marks on 61 inside 50s, which is just extraordinary effort. Like, they were not losing one-on-one contests all night. And quite a few of the Melbourne goals were long-range efforts.
Markov is a very talented player. He did a couple of hand passes that were very impressive in difficult positions. There's really something to work with him. And, you know, when he gets a good match-up, when Gallup's a good match-up for him, because he, obviously he's not going to physically dominate him, I can very much see the chain of thinking that led him to be played. If I was to drop anyone, it was another player who was actually okay on the day. It would be Menadue. But again, you're right.
Me too. I share that opinion. As it was a lovely goal assist to Rioli.
It was. And yet again, a game not without redeeming features, and again, a fast player who gets up and down the ground and plays the game. So Nick, there is something I wanted to bring up. It was from a fairly rubbishy source, but, it's going to lead somewhere interesting. Someone accused us of playing cheap football, running ahead of the ball. Now, we're not, but let's just roll with it. I can see why we look like that occasionally, because we do deliberately tap the ball forward to runners, because we know we've got quick outside runners, running towards goal. That is our game plan. Move the ball on quickly, get the ball in space, break the space with it, give our fast runners an opportunity, to use it. And that's why it looks like we're cheating, but we're not actually cheating. And do you know why you can tell statistically we're not cheating?
Because we're not getting done on the rebound much.
Exactly. For every turnover we have, we get scored on the least of any team in the AFL.
Good stat.
Yeah, I think it's Simon Walsh who sent that to us, but it is a good stat, and that is if you were cheating, you'd be getting done a lot on the rebound, but we're not, and the reason we're not getting done on the rebound is because we're playing a lot of guys back, and a lot of our players are very run hard two ways, so we're flooding back, very structurally sound defensively, and guys like Reece Conker actually are making a difference back there. But then, because we've got the athletic ability to break hard the other way, we flood back hard the other way, which is why it looks like we're cheating sometimes. But you would never accuse a Damien Hardwick team of cheating on the offensive side, and this team is no different.
No. Number, after 5 weeks, stingiest defense in the league, I thought it was Hooley's best game for the year. Asprey was so good, they ended up going really short, and he ended up at centre-half forward. You know, Rance...
I thought that deliberate free kick against them was complete bullcrap, by the way, but that's
I know. Look, I'm even more reluctant to criticise umpires since I... got my, admittedly, only level 1 qualification last year, but that is, some parts of the game are really hard to umpire, and that one, they don't seem to have it right. Like, it was, felt like Hogan got 2 of his 3 goals, from that rule. Not working.
So Lambert's almost become the new Morris on the forums as the person that everyone gets annoyed that he's picked. And, and even if you agree with that analysis, he's an infinitely, better, worse selection than Morris ever was. But in fairness to him, I thought he had a really good reward for persistence because he had 12 contested possessions, 20 overall. You know, was in our best, and I was very happy for him to play one of the best games of his career in one of the most meaningful occasions.
I have no problem, particularly with Shane Edwards out injured. Like having another guy who can play a couple of roles, take a turn in midfield. Yeah, he's got a bit of leg speed, goes in hard. He's no world beater, but you're getting different things with him versus Miles, but you know for now, that selection seems fine for me.
Yeah, I wouldn't drop him for Miles, as I said. Man crush time.
Yep.
I just love Riolwe.
I know.
I now get it. You know how annoying Hawthorn supporters used to be about Cyril?
I know.
He's just, there's just something.
I know. And you look at Cyril and, you know, he just never wins that much ball of the ball. And you think, how good can he be? And yeah. And then you begin to appreciate quite how much pleasure, you get both in the anticipation, but also in the payoff of when he gets near the ball and then when he does something brilliant with it.
Yeah, and there's just a moment where he just goes, like, there's a moment in the last, late in the last, it was in our forward 50, it was a stoppage, and he was just, his third or fourth efforts, he was just frantic and going faster than everyone else. He set up the caddy sealer by marking shorts, quite impressive. Short did some good things. I know he's not, I know, if you look, his stats were bad, but he actually, that last goal came from a nice, pickup of Conker's rushed quite clever underground hand pass, and Rioli took a beautiful mark of a difficult.
I know.
And then, you know, everything went well from there. But God, a 28 pressure acts didn't lead the team because Dusty, of all people, actually led the team for pressure acts. Seven scoring goal months.
I was surprised by that.
One, two in the team, but yeah, I just
I was thinking that Dusty wasn't quite his rampaging best with a groin injury, but yeah, he was good, and particularly so in the last quarter, which says that he can't be feeling all that bad.
Yeah, I think I don't know what it was, and maybe the groin got warm, but in the last he did a few things. He turned tight several times and balked several times, which indicated he had faith in his groin or just was going to ignore it. But yeah, I agree, he definitely got better as he went on. So Nick, we've gone this far, and in our typical fashion, we haven't mentioned our two best players.
Nick Kirbis and Jack?
Yes.
I don't know. I deeply enjoyed that thing you tweeted out about what Mank did to Jack Watts, but it was a real working over.
In fairness, you could make the case you did to Spencer's as well. So that's why I didn't choose a Melbourne Mank when it was a complete beatdown.
Yeah, and I liked the fact that you know, the commentator said, "Well, you know, Melbourne will get the extra midfielder." We were the ones with the big guy cracking in and getting involved in a lot more contests than they were. Well, I thought Jack Watts was okay in tough circumstances, but yeah, Mank was great and he worked really hard and we love him.
As has been pointed out by Tigers Vol on the internet, on Twitter, put up a nice little clip of that. That the Jack goal that put us in front, which was the most important game of the goal of the season, probably, because that came at the end of a long period of stalemate. That came from a beautiful Nank tap to Cochin, who read it beautifully when Melbourne were too tired to man up properly. He was just amazing. By the way, he only wears a shin guard on his left leg, which is it's a sign that he only lifts his left in ruck contest.
He's not an
ambi lifter. He's an ambi lifter. That was interesting. And Jack, you could make a case that whichever team had Jack, that game was going to win.
I know. So this game featured by Champion Data the two best key defenders in the league in Tom McDonald and Alex Rance. Now part of Tom McDonald being rated very highly is that he's a very good user of the ball for a key defender, but yeah, he sort of got his pants pulled down on this one.
Jack was incredible, just amazing.
And his conversion, like that, I know it's Jack just goes, you know, we've been watching it for a decade, so we know that his goal kicking goes in periods where he's feeling it and others when his mechanics are a bit off, but he was just feeling it. He was running on top of the ground. And, you know, I was thinking there's probably not a better key forward in the league in wet weather for his ability to be dangerous in all sorts of circumstance.
That's right. And, you know, the before-mentioned goal was an incredible shot. Late when you're tired on that boundary, wrong pocket for a right footer. Everything about it was fantastic. So, you know, in my endless quest to find a hipster contrarian thing to say about Elton, I have yet to do so. He did actually throw himself into some random packs and get his hand on a few balls that would have been hard elsewhere. And of course, he took that nice mark late. He's clearly been coached to, you know, just make a contest. Because he often goes up one-handed. Like, he's one step away from punching the ball when he goes up.
He's the ultimate role player. He's there in the team, you know, to stop the worst from happening when he goes through the ball.
Yeah, it is as you said to me offline, that, you know, wouldn't it be great if we had mid-season training so we could trade for Levi Casbolt?
I no, that, and that was, you know, I'm not saying we need to trade for Buddy or someone like that. Like, mere adequacy would be enough, because, you know, Elton's yet to kick a goal in his three games. Griff's gone down with a concussion again. Yeah.
Talking yourself into Chol is, which I've managed to do. I was not very high on Chol playing centre half forward, because he's got a second ruck, and if you're going to ruck, you've got to certain things you've got to do in the contest. But you know what I'm really hoping is that someone says that he's really grown in the VFL, and he, you know, he's tidied up that part of his game. Anyway,
it's a notable weakness in a team that's otherwise travelling pretty well. Like, I didn't think George Castagna had the best game, but you know he was still part of a forward line that worked well. It provided a lot of pressure, but yeah, no, the centre half forward's a problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, anything else about the game you wanted to mention?
Oh, look, I liked Josh Caddy's work. I think a bit of wet weather suits him, and he had 8 clearances. So again, having a bit more depth for the midfield's useful, and the ceiling goal was obviously deeply enjoyable. But
it still feels to me like the ball's not quite bouncing his way. I can't explain it, but it just feels like it's not coming together yet.
Not quite, no.
I just sort of, like, he still hasn't lived up to quite what I expected, but he's not awful.
No, he is. And he's about, 20 disposals and a goal a game is exactly what he was for Geelong last year, so.
But that's not what he's getting for us yet, is he?
He's pretty close. He was 20 disposals and a goal on the weekend. So.
This week, yeah, but he's averaging 18 and a bit under a goal. And, you know, he's playing on a winning team, so I guess he wasn't too long. I feel like a few more score involvements. You know, his AFL rating would be dropping from last year.
It'd be nice to get a little more out of him. But no, it was a good win. It was a deeply enjoyable win. And yeah, there's some pretty tough games to come. But do you want to talk about the other really big news from the week?
The Immaculate Conception, or not immaculate, probably.
Conception. No, I did enjoy it, where it just flashed up in my phone and you sent me a message that just said "Richo" for exclamation marks, and I had a pretty good idea what it was.
It's been a few years since I've sent you a text like that. I wondered how much the gold frankincense and myrrh was Googled.
Was overkill.
In Richmond after the announcement. But it's very exciting, and we should point out, after all the remarks about the child's gender, that, you know, in 18 years' time, hopefully we should have a women's team, so, you know, arguably they could put he or she could play for Richmond either way.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, potentially a third generation Richmond player as well.
Good point.
Yeah, which we don't have a lot of. I think the Burks are the only ones that come to mind.
Yes.
So another solid win in the VFL, and we have a good VFL team. It's started happening at the end of last season, but they're really working well, and yeah, some encouraging performances as well.
Yeah, the Charles 3 goals, and apparently he was jumping at everything. Bit disappointed by Lennon not backing up another
game. He's otherwise, he's been dominant in the VFL. He took an awesome mark in the last quarter to help seal the game. But yeah, it was down on his other performance.
The performance in a 200 game thrashing. really like. You can see the need for a player like Lennon on the team. Who else impressed you?
Well, Ryan Garthwaite was listed as close to our best player, which is pretty good. He's a 190 centimetres, 192 centimetres, 18-year-old, had 18 disposals, 5 marks, 5 tackles, a lot of brave intercept possessions. And if he was 195 centimetres, I'd be over the moon. But yeah, for a young guy in his second VFL game, that was encouraging. And ditto for Shai Bolton in his first VFL game. A couple of tidy goals, some referred pressure. But even he wasn't even our most impressive first-year small forward, as Tyson Stengel had 20 disposals and, again, good pressure. So we've gone from paupers to having almost an abundance of riches when it comes to young small forwards.
Yeah, I know. If one of the three Mosquito Fleet go out, we've got instant replacement. And, you know, it's not impossible that Rioli broke his hand at the end of the game. God, I hope not. And frankly, I'd be tempted to play him after anyway, because his pressure's so good. But, we've got lots of options, and probably unlike Richmond, our first draft pick is not the first option off, first cab off the ring. Nick, I wanted to ask you a question. Any chance of, and I can see all sorts of problems with this, but what do you think of the idea of, if Garthwaite keeps playing this way, we bring him in to play Asprey spot and we move Asprey to centre half forward?
Well, I was thinking about that as Asprey played centre half forward in the last quarter. He was okay.
Wasn't much sure. When Luke Darcy said, Asprey's been really important at centre half forward, for about the third time that game, I thought that Luke Darcy sort of makes things up on the instant.
I wasn't. Look, I would be fine if Garthwaite just had a really good year in the VFL and wasn't needed in the seniors. Chol, the one thing about Chol is that he was a junior ruckman, so you would assume that he's going to acquit himself reasonably well there, because it is. I've been shocked by that. It seems occasionally even that Grigg takes a forward 50 tap out ahead of
Elton.
Yeah, but even...
he's probably taken 15 of them for the year.
I know, but he seems to even do them occasionally when Elton's around, which,
the coaches do not like Elton. They barely play him. Like, he's always the last man to play. The unspoken implicit message is that we're doing this only because we absolutely have to, and we don't want Prestia to be standing on the balls going down the line. Is fair enough.
Yeah. I would have extremely modest expectations of if we gave Chol a go, but yeah.
But he might check a goal.
Yeah, he might check a goal. And yeah. The two other things from the BFL game. One, really sad news with Nathan Drummond doing his knee again. Just really bad luck for a kid that everyone speaks very highly of. And on a positive note, Corey Ellis getting 28 disposals and 7 tackles and keeping up his usual high standard of disposal. So, yeah, I'm very happy with it.
Yeah, that was the one I circled as... it's a bit unfair to Miles, because Miles didn't play because he was probably the first man in
first
the
emergency,
Dusty.
Yeah.
But that just made me, you know, if Corey Ellis is getting 25 plus touches, that's great to put him in the seniors.
Yeah, he's hurting teams with that.
But actually, unusually for me, I'm quite happy with the amount of young players we have in the team. We've got 10 players under 50 at the moment, games, and probably not premiership team, but, you know, decent team. I'm quite happy with that. So, yeah, I'm almost okay with our number of kids.
No, and they're giving people a go. You know, somebody will probably come out for Vlossy this week. But, yeah, no.
That's true.
And younger guys, as we mentioned, younger guys pushing through in the VFL as well. So, encouraging.
Okay.
All right. It's big bucket of cold water time. So the betting line just before we went to record that I saw was minus 34.5 points. That's a lot.
That's a slap in the face.
Yep.
That's as Bill Simmons would say, that's a nobody believes in us line.
Yeah. Which, look, when looking into the stats, I mean, there's an awful lot that's scary when you look at Adelaide's stats. They've been
former supreme.
Yeah, and it's an overwhelming forward line. Regularly kicking 150 points a game, getting kicking goals from a whole range of guys, and all the big names: Eddie Betts, Tom Lynch, Tex Walker, but also, Andy Otten's been a productive forward. A guy who hasn't played in 3 years, and Riley Knight's creative half forward. Yeah, there's a lot to like. They have an identical number of inside 50s as we do, and are walking away with about five more goals a game. Like it's pretty impressive. Andy?
Isn't that interesting, Nick? Because that's sort of one of the defining things about Richmond is that we're incredibly efficient inside 50, and it just seems to be the way of modern football. That's what good teams are.
I know. And then when you look at marks inside 50, we're quite good at it. They are best in the league, and the difference between them and the second best is the same as the difference between second best and 13th. Right there. Yeah. And they're playing at the Adelaide Oval for the fourth time in 6 weeks. So, yeah, it's not going to be easy.
Yeah, from my perspective, we're playing with house money right now.
Yeah, that's true.
We've been the five games, and a couple of the closer games, we've had one or two bounces our way, but you've got to take those chances, and we have taken those chances. All I want is I'm going to enjoy this game. The Melbourne game was just, I was a wreck. I was tense. We can afford to lose this game. What I would like to see is a competitive performance.
Yeah, exactly.
I would be surprised, I'll probably be selling Richmond stock like mad halfway, just before bounce down on Sunday. But right now, I think that's a very unfair line. I think we should be 20 point underdogs, but 33 is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot. And a lot was made, with a degree of reason about Melbourne losing two players, but we've come home with a wet sail against Collingwood and West Coast, despite losing players with injury during the game as well. So there's a bit of it was just, that we've got this ability to put on these surges. So yeah, the key for me, our defence has to keep playing well, absorb some pressure, prevent easy goals, take some opportunities on the break. Yeah, we can make it competitive. Their midfield is good without being overwhelming. It's been their relative efficiency of how much they're converting their ball into goals. Their defence is, again, is good without being great, but they're an attacking weapon, and if we can slow that down, hopefully we've got a chance.
And Nank, we forget how much Nank has struggled against some of the better ruckmen. After this,
well, he's played reasonably well against Jacobs. Not for enormous amounts of time in their last two games, but he's
played 2-on-1. I looked at that game in the looking for signs. So we'll wait and see. But he needs to be respectable. Like in all the games he's been beaten, you can make a case that he was at least it was a points decision. So he needs to at least have a points loss.
Yeah, he needs. Look, and Jacobs is maybe a better match. Jacobs' big body, long arms. He's maybe a better matchup than the really athletic guys like Nat Nuidi and Goldstein. But although Nat did show a turn of pace that was surprising this week.
Is there anything he can't do? Flipping ambulances. He's just an endless source of joy for Richmond supporters. So, as I said, I'll take up a competitive performance.
I know. I'll be nervous when the time comes. I'd love for us to win. But, yeah, just Adelaide are a genuine premiership contender. Be good to show that we belong on the same field.
Exactly.
I'm Nick.
I'm Andy.